Thank you, brother. I thought they only had the bright lights for Jason. Wow. Whew. My name's Robert Albrecht, and I'm an alcoholic. That will be done. So, anyways, yeah, I'm done. Clap. Exactly, I'm not Paul Wegeman. Paul Wegeman is my sponsor. And first of all, let me back up a second. I have a sobriety date. It's December the 28th, 2002. I have a men's home group. It's called the Robber's Roost. We meet in Vista, California at 6:30 on Thursday evenings. Don't be like some of you guys and look for us in the schedule. We're not there. You got to be invited or ran up in there, one of the two, you know what I mean? And we're about probably 80 to 120 strong. The core group is probably about 40 to 50 guys that show up on a regular basis. And we believe in strong sponsorship. We believe in doing your steps right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We believe strongly in service. And I like to put it this way. Sometimes, you know, you hear people say, they gossip at that meeting or they do that. Well, we call that accountability at the Robber's Roost. You know what I mean? Because if somebody else is talking about you, you're probably getting ready to get pulled up on something. You know what I mean? So, anyways, let me see. I also have a sponsor. I already told you that. His name is Paul Wegeman. His sponsor's name, Tom. His sponsor's name is Steve. His sponsor's name is Sam. And his sponsor's name is Paul. And last I checked, Paul was still alive and pushing close to 60 years of sobriety. And then the thing about that, so that's what means what? I have a great, 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 great grand sponsor. Three greats. It's not in grams or ounces. I have a hard time doing math, you know what I mean? So the other thing is I'm actually somebody's great grand sponsor. And let me tell you what's great about all that. The thing that's great about all that is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous work. If you work them right out of this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And I kind of had to learn that the hard way. But anyways, what else did I forget already? First of all, gentlemen, I don't know whether you're going to get America's Dumbest Criminal version tonight, you're going to get the most domestic violent guy tonight, the homeless version, or what you're going to get. Or whether you're going to get a little bit of all of it. I'd be able to tell you what I'd like to be able to say. I've rehearsed it for a week or so now, but it never happens. I try to make myself like the sixth step, ready, willing, and available. And you know, if you don't like what I got to say tonight, call Paul, my sponsor, you know. All the good stuff, I'll be down there afterwards. You can tell me about that, you know what I mean? And the other thing is, what a great job you guys did on raising money, man. And what was the new guy's name, Brandon? Hey, welcome to, Brad. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. They weren't clapping for me when I got here, you know what I mean? I was not receiving a standing ovation, buddy. And the other thing is I don't know about these yellow tags, you know what I mean? Because where I come from, if you had a yellow band on, you were in protective custody. You were not acting accordingly, you know what I mean? So, yeah, here's to the yellow card. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm in protective custody, all right. I'm in protective custody of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you got to stick with me, you know. It's kind of hard. I have a lot of letters behind my name. ADHD, PTSD, bipolar, all that other kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And AA is the two easy letters, you know what I mean? And the other part is also that they say I get a little obnoxious, I get a little loud, and sometimes I annoy people. And my answer for that is they make medication for guys like me. But I don't like it. So if I bother you, I'll get you the medication. Please don't stop taking your medication when you leave here, okay? Some people need it. Anyways, so I did say I'm an alcoholic. This is an AA event. Okay, let me backtrack again. The other thing I forgot. See, I don't have to talk about drugs in my story. It's evident that I did them. I enjoyed the side effects of them till I was 46, and now you guys get to suffer the consequences, I guess. Yeah. So, let me tell you a little bit about my AA sponsorship lineage. My first grand sponsor was a gentleman by the name of Kip Collins. Woohoo! Love you, big guy! And he had a sponsor, and his name was Pat T. And he had a sponsor, and his name was Harry. And I believe Harry died with, what, 56 years of sobriety? And then my lineage changed. And then I got a new lineage. And it went to Paul, Tom, Lanny. And what was Lanny's sponsor? The last one was a woman, and then he had an old janitor gentleman from Long Beach who I'm having a mind bubble and I can't remember his name. And then Lanny died. And now I have a new sponsorship lineage, which I just told you about. And to you, that may not mean much. It means a lot to me, though. Because we heard the other gentleman, which I would like to... Jason, what a great job you did. You know, I'm suffering from sleep deprivation. You know, I hope after I share tonight, I can snore as hard as you did last night. And who was the gentleman this morning? Was it Ethan, Jeff, and Ron? That's pretty good. I never tried that from the podium before. Usually I goof it all up. You know what I mean? I got the memory of a pithan on Quaaludes, you know? Let me see. The other part is what a great job they did. Fantastic speakers, you know what I mean? That could end right now, though, you know. So, that Kip Collins guy, he came over here and spoke. And what happened was, is they sent him back to the land of the fruits and nuts in Southern California with $500. I know you guys raised $19,000 tonight, but you're looking at a little bit of that $500 that you guys sent back with him right here. Thank you very much. And I'm going to tell you something that there's people in the big median sky by the name of Jack Laird, Kip Collins, Lanny Thomas, Hippo. I'm probably forgetting four or five. Big Jack Laird. These men are all in heaven. I call them ape hangers in heaven. You know what I mean? These guys are cruising the universe, man. And what the deal is those men in my life are like the Bill Sanders and the Randys, and the men that stood with 30 years and above, and 20 years and above, are the men in your life. I didn't go to their house every day. I didn't hang out with them every day. I watched them. They didn't tell me about Alcoholics Anonymous. They showed me. And they didn't show it to me in the book. They were a living, what do they call those things? Living sermons or whatever they are. You know, them acting sermons they do at church? So, they showed me. And for you newer guys, let me tell you something. If you stick around Alcoholics Anonymous and you get a home group and you become accountable and you have that kind of sponsorship, they even show you how to die around here. You know, my friend Steve DeBall come up to me. Guy, you know, and these men were suffering from pain and cancer and stuff, and you never heard them complain. I don't even have cancer. I'm a whiny little girl, right, Ralph? Watch your language. Thank you, brother, for the prayer. And then the other part is they never did that, you know. And Steve DeBall came up to me one time, and he's being treated, and he's getting to the roost, to the robber's roost. And I'm telling him, I'm like, hey, brother, you think when you die I can have your high heels and your lipstick? You know what I mean? Because we always used to call me a gay Nazi biker for Christ or something. But sorry if I offended anybody. Not. So what happened is he pulled me to the side one day. He goes, hey, Robert, guess what I did, man? He goes, I went down and paid off the house today without my wife knowing about it before he passed. That's the kind of stuff I get to be taught. You know what I mean? And you say, what does that got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? Do the 12 steps, right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'll teach you how to die. And when you die at our group, the people, the newcomers, look around like, wow, you're collecting money for this guy and everything? And I tell them, yeah, if you stick around long enough till you die, we'll collect money for you too. Give to your wife. You know what I mean? So, anyways, this one here is for those men in heaven and for my friend Twitchy. And we call him Twitchy because he twitched for the first 4 or 5 years. He wasn't a shaking cup of coffee. He twitched. I got here right about the time he quit twitching. And I'll only share one Twitchy story with you. You guys know him as Steve Batch. And what happened was, is I needed a job. You know, I'm one of those guys, hey, I'll do anything. On parole, all that good stuff. And what happened is Twitchy said, come on, you're going to go paint with me today. You know, it was a trip. We were painting the judge's house who used to send him to jail. That's the kind of weird stuff you see. Anyways, gentlemen, okay, this is my story. What happened was, I believe I was born an alcoholic, you know what I mean? And I was born in 1957. I think moms were still allowed to smoke and drink back then, you know what I mean, when they were pregnant without going to jail. So I come out of the womb premature. I was just a little over 3 pounds. I looked like a crack baby at birth, you know what I mean? And they didn't even think I was supposed to live. So anyways, we're going to pick that up. I'm probably born with a little alcohol on my breath and stuff like that. Anyways, what happened was is we'll move it up a little bit. I remember going to kindergarten thinking, because I felt different like all them other guys you've heard speak, you know. And the way that I felt and the way that I know about alcohol now, I probably could have used a drink, you know what I mean, at 5. It's kind of hard to get somebody to buy for you. So, where am I going with this, man? See what happens when I don't get no sleep, Jason? I'm gonna try to skip a bunch of stuff here. So anyways, what happened is my first drink of alcohol was some stuff called cold duck. It's for high society guys or whatever, but it was all the Albrecht family Christmas party. I drank it. I liked the way it felt. I puked, said I'd never do that again. And then the next time was at the summer snowmobile drag races in Michigan. That's where I was born, Flint, Michigan. And we were drinking warm draft beer out of a pony keg in August in the back of El Camino, and I drank that stuff as much as I could and threw up and said I'd never do it again. And then my stepfather used to drink. He was what you call a functional alcoholic. I don't know what the hell that is, but I guess because he'd go into work every day, he never went to jail. So what happened was he drank 4 or 5 Manhattans or martinis or whatever, drambuie afterwards, and scotch and water until he passed out. And then he got up in the morning and went to work. And after I had sampled that cold duck and stuff, we used to put colored water in empty whiskey bottles and act like the adults. Fake it till you make it, right? So what happened was I accidentally got the wrong bottle switched around, and I tipped that Wild Irish Rose up like it was colored water, and it was the real stuff. Whew! I could barely keep it down. But shortly after that, I liked the way it made me feel. You know what I mean? I'll kick kindergarten's ass. So, moving right along. The next alcohol experience I had was, I grew up in a little town, Standish, Michigan, 2,000 people. It gets kind of cold there during the winter. And we had been drinking. I don't even know what I drank. All I know is the chief of police, he also owned a bakery, you know, in a town that size. He brought me home. He found me head first in a snowbank with my pants down to my ankles. Apparently I stopped to pee and fell head first into the yellow snow. And if he wouldn't have found me, I would have froze to death there, butt up in the air, you know what I mean? Yeah, cold duck, all right. And then I used to begin to steal pills from my mother. And what happened is my uncles came home from Vietnam when I was in junior high school. And I've done everything that you can possibly think that came back from that side of the world before I was 15 years old. And that's including the acupuncture alcoholic version, you know what I mean? Woo! That's exactly what happened with China White. And then you went out. I called drugs in my story alcoholic enhancers. You know what I mean? Quaaludes and Crown Royal whiskey take you down quick. Then later on in life, there was other stuff, but the judge told me about enhancements too, you know what I mean? But so anyways, what happened was I'd love to tell you about my teenage years, but I can't remember them. Because I was a blackout pill head. And then what happened is I got in lots of kind of trouble. Like I left 1976 in Michigan on the run. Make a short story long, or long story short. And skipped bail on my mother, $3,000. I chased the guy that we beat up all those gas station attendants around the golf course with a shotgun. So see, I don't really golf too much anymore. But my buddy and I left on the run. It took us 4.5 months in 1976 to hitchhike to Santa Barbara, California. Back then, you didn't have to worry about people picking you up and chopping into 26 little pieces, put you in the freezer and eat you later, you know what I mean? They'd pick you up and ask you where you're going, get you drunk, get you high, give you a little money, and you know what I mean? It was cool. Well, I'd like to tell you that my alcoholism only got better in Santa Barbara, California. How does it go, Randy? You got wussa and wussa. My alcoholism progressed, believe it or not. I think it's progressing right now. I just don't know it. It's waiting for me. Like them tweaker people waiting on me, you know what I mean? If I pick up a drink today, it's going to be worse. It. So, I got to Santa Barbara, California. I think that's where Looker used to get his dope delivered to him in through the mailbox lot, right? Because he still had checks left. Anyway, I got involved with some Hispanic people there. And different things led to another. And the next thing you know, the firearms and tobacco people were visiting our house. And we got raided. And I was laying in bed on a good nod, you know, and I thought, man, this is good as shit, man. You know what I mean? Fucking cops with flashlights and everything, you know what I mean?
Wake up, buddy. You ain't dreaming.
My first under the influence of alcohol and drugs in the state of California. And the gentleman, the guys that I came out from Michigan with, one's daddy was a judge, wrote him a bunch of letters, and away he went. And then the guy who brought the undercover people over, the Hispanic people kind of took care of that, you know what I mean? Missing witness or something, I don't know how that happened. And then kind of split up in that little circle, gun fencing, something to that effect. But let me not forget the alcohol. On our porch, we drank anywhere from 6 or 7 cases of beer a day. A couple of big bottles of Tyrolea. Some of them were the electric version, if you know what I mean. And my first DUI was in Santa Barbara, California. I was going down Highway 101 in a 48 Dodge Lowrider at 7 miles an hour. Because my Takayo, Bobby Velez, was too loaded to drive. I found out in the police report. They told me to get out of the car. I can't. And when he opened the door, I fell out and puked on his boots, and it was all downhill from there, you know what I mean? And the next morning, I was in the Santa Barbara courthouse trying to tell the judge, I only had 2. Correct alcoholic answer, right? He goes, they must have been awful big ones. He goes, because you're supposed to be dead from alcohol poisoning. You blew a 4 or something. So the Hispanic people, that broke up, and then I left town and went and turned myself back into Michigan and said I've been out in California being a good boy, you know, did 90 days. And I still owe my mom the bail money. I started paying her back. I got her paid back for the $500 to get your ass out of Greyhound bus ticket town, you know what I mean? And gave her like the first 1,000, and then she told me to wait, and then I started hiding money around the house, and she was donating it to the Goodwill store and stuff. So she told me to save it till she gets older, but I'm going to have to get after her because it makes me feel better. Selfish. So where was I at, Looker?
We were just breaking out of Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah, breaking out of Santa Barbara. Thank you, sir. I need help in Alcoholics Anonymous, trust me. So what happened was, is I went there, turned myself back in, came back to Santa Barbara on one of them get-out-of-town bus tickets, and I landed up with the biker guys this time, you know what I mean? And I'd like to say it went much better than it did with the Mexican guys, you know what I mean? But what happened is I met my daughter's mother there. I lived with these guys. I lived with this guy, his name was Mac. He was about this big. You know what I mean? And then his brother Freddie, and we ran a chrome shop up in San Ynez, California called Cox Custom Chrome. And we chrome plated a lot of motorcycles for different organizations. We'll leave it at that, because I like to keep that part of anonymity possible too some days. And what happened was, is I lived at Mac's house in the garage with my motorcycle and my booze and my different substances. What are they called, Ralph? White powdery substances or something? Yeah. And I lived there in the garage with that and the motorcycles. I didn't even live in a house in California until I had a kid. So what happened was, is we partied, man. We partied hard, rode hard, partied hard, did all that stuff. And my daughter's mother, Linda, she was the 15-year-old daughter. She was supposed to get married to a gentleman of a not the same race, you know what I mean, which didn't set well in the biker community. So her older brother and I drug her down there and made her get an abortion. And about a year or two later, that guy she was supposed to marry down there in Long Beach, he got caught cheating with somebody else. And I was just a friend of the family, you know. And what happened was, is I fell in love. What I thought was love. And I could go into a whole other story about that, but I'm not going to. Hey, you guys up there in the gun tower, wave the flag at me when I'm getting close, okay? The guy's in the booth up there. So, I can't take breaks like that. Where was I at again, looker? Yeah, her, thank you. The mother of my child, Linda. And what happened was, is, they didn't like the idea of me hanging around with baby sister. And thank God we were both falling down drunk when her brother Mac and I were trying to shoot at each other in the front yard and missed, you know what I mean? And that's how I landed up in San Diego, California. And we had my daughter, Alicia. And what happened was, is I tried to be a good dad. I got a job at the shipyard. I took welding school. I did all that kind of stuff. And what happened was, is this guy came up to me and he told me, he goes, man, you work a lot of hours, brother. You work at the shipyard and then you go over to the welding school. Try this out. What happened was, is I did that stuff alcoholically. And then what happened was, is when my daughter's in the hospital being born, I'm in there spun ducky woo-woo, trying to drink booze to come down enough so I think I can go in there and pull off this Lamaze crap, you know what I mean? Smoke a left-handed cigarette, go in there and try, see how that works, you know what I mean? But this is how bad my alcoholism was. I was there to be able to watch my little girl be born. And what happened was, is they beat me home from the hospital. Because I was at the Yukon Bar, where all the biker fellows hang out on University Avenue down there in Dago, sharing my excitement with them. And then it progressively got worse, my alcohol. And what happened was, is she got smart and left me. Because No woman should have to put up with that. Verbal, emotional, mental, physical abuse. And she put her restraining. Well, what happened was I was making a vain attempt at recovery again down at the San Diego Rescue Mission. And you know, when you're early, oh my God, I got a baby, I got a woman, what am I going to do? I call her up, honey, what are we going to do? We got a child, we got to get... She goes, I don't got time for this stuff. And hung up the phone. And I used that as a cheap excuse to drink. I went down to Ocean Beach to a little place called H.A. Alley, and I did some of the best P2P made in the United States of America, and I drank Mezcal. And I went over to that apartment after she had put a restraining order on me. I cut the phone cord on the outside of the building. I took the gun out of the truck that the guy told her to put the restraining order on. And then I put, it was a sliding glass door on the apartment, so I put a nice little chunk of wood in there. And then I came through the bedroom and I scared the living crap out of my 2-year-old daughter and my adopted niece. She ran for the phone. Nice try. Ran for the door. Nice try. And then I told her she's going to sit down and listen to what I got to say. And I cracked her in the head with the butt of the pistol. I pistol whipped the mother of my child. And I don't say that because it makes me crazy or bad or anything. That's where alcohol takes me. I don't care about the loved ones. I don't care about my kids. If you get in the way of my alcohol, I will beat you. I will push you completely out of my life. And I'll make sure I do such a good job that you don't want to come back. Because that's the only way I know how to do it. I can't tell you. It's not working. Could you please leave? And then what happened is, I went homeless for 3 years. I seen my daughter and my mother and her mother in the grocery store. They ran behind the pharmacy counter. He's going to kill me. And I just left. I spent 3 years on the streets of San Diego, homeless. And then what happened is, I finally got arrested. You know, when I was drinking and when I was on methamphetamine, I thought I was part of Hell's Angels. When I was drinking and I was on downers and brown tar heroin, I thought I was part of the Mexican Mafia. When I was in the county jail rolling buglers, part of the Aryan Brotherhood and the Skinheads. Still trying to fit in, man. Still trying to fit in. Granted, all those people I mentioned were very, very close by. But I was just a blackout freaking punk, you know what I mean? They used me like a pawn. I was stealing these kind of fluids, chemicals, whatever you want, from this club to that club. And I should be dead. And then I got sent to prison. Believe it or not, I don't know why. That's a whole nother story. On probation, got busted. Ran into a bus bench 4 o'clock in the morning with a girl who looked like Stevie Nicks, I thought. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go into that. So I got to prison, did my first prison sentence, which by the grace of God was only 16 months because they put a lid on my probation because for some reason or another I didn't like showing up for probation. And then I got in there and I'll be darned if I didn't get baptized in a prison laundry tub and bumped on my butt and spoke in tongues. One Christmas, I was in prison. Following Easter, they had me lit up in a baptistry with lights on, and my beard was long, and my hair was long. They made me look just like Jesus. Coming back. There's only one problem with that. They tell me Jesus healed all of my diseases. And I believe that to be true. I'm not knocking Jesus. I'm not knocking Bible. I'm not knocking the church. I'm just telling you it didn't work for me. Because I didn't understand the physical allergy, the mental obsession that we read about in the doctor's opinion. I just thought I was a loony bin. I thought I was a demon-possessed loony bin. You know what I mean? And what happened was, is I did real good for a year or two. And then what happened? Well, I'm never going back to prison. Don't ever say never, new guy. And then what happened was, is I seen these guys at church having a beer with their burger. I'm like, nice, Christians can drink, nice. Don't be in excess, brother. It's good. Just don't be in excess. Didn't realize I had a problem with excessiveness. So what happened was, is that started the terrible cycle of emotion again. And what was happening is I would drink on a weekend or a Friday night or a Saturday night and snip it in the butt, man. Get to church on Sunday. You know? And my problem then was, is I had sex, love, intimacy, all that stuff confused, man. Everything in my life that was either sex or intimate or love was like, we're on the tape. Or CD. So that's what I thought. That's the way I was raised. And that's what I grew up with, instilling that in my head. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. And that's love. So I go get hookers after church, you know what I mean? What happened is I'd start with that little Friday night thing. And then the next thing you know, it's Saturday and I'm in TJ. Cheap hookers. Strong dope, good tequila. And back to prison, man. Come out, do the same thing. I developed patterns. Kazunta. Developed patterns to where I could fool myself with that social drinking. I thought I had control of it. That's a lie, man. If I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. And if I'm enjoying it, I damn sure ain't controlling it. So what happened was, is I went back to prison for the third time, man. And then before that, in between those, was it first and second prison term? My son was born. Because that was a whole nother Christian relationship. It was okay. Sex out of wedlock. All my kids were born out of wedlock. Anyways, so my son was born. I went back to prison for the last time. Told you about my first DUI? Tell you about my last DUI. They found me asleep at the wheel in my little Isuzu truck. I had the clutch in, Limp Bizkit bumping at 600 watts. Fifth of Jack Daniels in between my legs. 68 grams of methamphetamine in here. 19 grams of heroin. 357 here. 380 here. Throwing stars, throwing knives for the tweakers in the visor. The people were after me. There wasn't enough booze in the world to get rid of them guys, you know what I mean? My day consisted of a 30-pack in the morning, a bottle of rum, and about four plungers a day. And the only thing that got the boogeyman and the paranoia away after being up for 17, 18, how many ever days, was the black tar heroin. Most people who disappear right away. Nobody in the house likes you anymore, but they, you know. So I drank a 30-pack, the plungers, and a bottle of rum every day for almost 2 years. And then they found me in my car. And I didn't even wake up until they were pulling the needle out of my arm for my California commercial driver's license at the Escondido police station. As they were pulling the needle out of my arm, I looked up and I'm like, oh, that's not very good. Holy shit, I was in the police department, flat strapped down to a gurney, and they were pulling blood out of me. I wasn't getting high. Then what happened was, you know, first of all, there's just so many things that alcohol did for me, didn't do for me. There's just not enough time for me to tell you all the stories and all the good things and all the bad and everything in an hour or so. You're getting what God brings to my little... How's it go, Jason? You see, my two brain cells this morning were looking at each other like they were going to breed or something? So anyways, what happened was, as I was a two-time loser, I just got caught with two firearms. And in the state of California, I thought I was going to prison for life. It's called step zero. And then you get the gift of desperation. I can't put into words the feeling in my spirit and in my heart, even while I'm kicking booze and dope and stuff, of that I'm never getting out. And there was nobody I could call. One number. Some meth head. I had all my stuff up in the loft in her garage. And she answered. I left them girls enough stuff and everything to pay off the truck. Well, everybody knows how that one went, right? Money on the books, took care of me, all they don't know. So what happened was, I thought I was going for life. And I married a little 19-year-old girl because I wanted to make sure she lasted through my boneyard visits till I died in there. And I wrote her dad a letter with the best intentions and everything. Could you imagine that, having a 19-year-old daughter and an idiot like me write you a letter from jail about how I'm going to take care of your daughter? I had to put a contract out on that idiot in prison, you know what I mean? And what happened was, I'm like, sell the kids, man. Sell them on the black market. We'll buy them back. Great ideas, alcoholics. You know what I mean? Might have got away with the young one. Get me the best outlaw biker attorney you can find. And what happened was, is my public defender, public pretender, bald head guy, little short guy, he comes in, he goes, don't do that, man, I got him. I'm like, come on, buddy, you got him? I got an E and a K in the number, an E and a K number, and I have manufacturing sales of dangerous weapons, possession of sawed-off shotguns, gun fencing, all that kind of stuff, and you got him? I thank my grandfather for when I lived with him when I was a toddler on the farm in Michigan, and he taught me gun safety. And about three fools that I seen spun out of their minds stick a gun in their pants and shoot themselves in the leg, you know what I mean? I stayed real drunk, so unless I was going in somewhere, I didn't have one racked in the chamber or in front of the firing pin on the revolver, you know? This guy went in there and told me, Your Honor, he only had the guns for protection for himself. He had no harmful intent. He was a drug dealer. Look at the drugs he had. He had a little baggage, cash, all that stuff. That guy came back with, he said, I got you 4 years with half. I'm like, can I sign it right now? Before they change their mind? You don't got to wait till after lunch or anything, do you? And I signed that, baby. God.
Thought, man, I better keep his happy ass out of prison, maybe send him to Atlanta in 15 years.
So what happened was, as I went into the prison system once again, and what happened is they had this thing called SAP. I'm like, what the hell is that? I go, you've been sapped. I'm like, really? Substance abuse program. I did 17 months of behavioral modification in the California Department of Corrections. Think they weren't on my resentment list? But what happened in there was it made me write timelines about my alcohol use, my drug use, my violence, and all that other stuff. And I hated it. Hated it! And then what happened was is these scruffy biker guys, this is after an act of God where the CC3 Lozano pulled my records for my high school diploma. I tell people I graduated from CMC. California Men's Colony, in case you thought it was a college or something. I got a PhD. Really? Yeah, poor hopeless drunk. You know, doing big things. What happened is these guys came in on their motorcycles, and by that time, CC3 Lozano had pulled my records, got my points lowered, and I got shipped to a camp, a fire camp, instead of staying in a cell all day. Another God shot, you know what I mean? I don't know if you can see God all through this, but I sure did. And what happened was, these guys would come in on Wednesday nights at this camp we were at. And they didn't care that I was a level one killer with a gate pass, you know what I mean? They were more concerned about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We thought we were going to go there and get coffee and donuts and there's going to be girls and all that kind of stuff. And what they said, it was some scruffy old suckers, you know what I mean? And what they did is, they opened this damn book, and they made us read out of it, and ask if we had any questions. And then what happened was, is I looked down at this little card, and it says, "Why we are chosen." And I'm like, oh,
I know them guys, the chosen few, you know what I mean? Gang members, all that shit.
Some of them guys are rolling over in their grave right now. You hear that asshole? Sorry. So, having been in this Christian drama productions and all that kind of stuff, I thought I was going to be a missionary, a pastor, or maybe even the next Christian comedian. And what happened is I looked down and I seen the little thing that said, "Why we are chosen." I usually say this for last, but I run out of time. So this, I believe this was my first, I'm not a real quick study, you know what I mean? So I didn't have like magnificent things of clarity and spiritual awakenings. That was all on LSD. You know what I mean? But God kept sending things like scripture. Somebody showed me about alcohol in the book of Proverbs. I'm like, get out of here. You know what I mean? And what happened is, I read this right here. And it was written by a judge. Where are you, Joe? Jewel? I wanted to say at the 1945 International Convention in Chicago. My little squiggly lines got cut off when I made the copies, so I apologize if I'm misinforming you guys. It says right here, God, in His wisdom, selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of His goodness. In selecting those to bring about this phenomenon, He went not to the proud, the mighty. Instead, to the humble and unfortunate. He went to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. He might well have said to us, "Unto your weak and feeble hands I have entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which has been denied the most of learned of your fellows. Not to scientists, not to wives, nor mothers, not even to my priests or ministers have I given this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. It must be used unselfishly. It carries with it grave responsibility. No day can be too long, no effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its application to no race, no creed, and no denomination. Personal criticism you must expect. Lack of appreciation will be common. Ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. You must be prepared for adversity. For what men call adversity is the ladder you must ascend, rung by rung, toward spiritual perfection. And remember, in exercising this power, I shall not extract from you beyond your capabilities. You are not selected because of your exceptional talents. Be careful always if success attends your efforts, not to ascribe to personal superiority that to which you can lay claim to only by virtue of my gift. I have wanted learned men to accomplish, if I had wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to the physician or the scientist. If I had wanted eloquent men, there would have been many anxious for the assignment. For talk is the easiest used of all talents, which I have bestowed upon mankind. If I had wanted scholarly men," that's not the guys who work in the kitchen at the prison either. "The world is filled with better qualified men than you. The world, hold on a second. The world would be filled with better qualified men than you who would be available. You were selected because you have been the outcast of the world, and your experience as drunkards has made, in parentheses, or should make you, humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you made on the day of your profession in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you were powerless, and that was only with your willingness to turn your life and your will into my keeping that relief came to you." When I got out of prison, they sent me to a place called Choices in Recovery. First, they sent me to Amity Ranch. That didn't work well. More behavior modification. I like it out here out from under them lights. And what happened was that didn't work out well. And so they sent me to another place called Choice. Oh, first I went to that house of the girl I called while I was in jail. And I sat there for a week, waiting for my SAP counselor to find me somewhere to go. And I'm watching people getting drunker and skunks, you know what I mean, and coming out of the bathroom with their eyeballs wobbling, drooling all over themselves and stuff. "Hey, guys, we're really glad you're clean and sober." I'm like, "I gotta get out of here, man," you know what I mean? So I called my, and she goes, "Okay." And we called like the other three or four recovery homes I'd already been in. This is like my ninth one. And so what happened is I landed up at a place called Choices in Recovery in Vista, California. And they told me I had to get a sponsor, man, within 2 weeks. So you know me, day 13, NA meeting. Because my friend Kickstarter Marta told me, "You're not an alcoholic. You're a drug addict, man. Quit trying to fake it over there in Alcoholics Anonymous. Get your butt in there and tell them you're a drug addict." So I seen my sponsor at this recovery home a couple years earlier when we were both struggling or whatever. And I walked up to him and I'm like, "Hey, man, will you be my sponsor?" He goes, "Yeah, I got some requirements." I'm like, "Requirements?" And we're at an NA meeting. He goes, "Well, I work out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous." I'm like, "Wow. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I need a sponsor or else they're going to get after me. I'm government funded. County born, state raised, and federally funded, you know what I mean?" So what happened was, he says, give me a call tomorrow. And I called him up, and he goes, "I have some requirements if you want me to be your sponsor." Any of you guys get that when you ask for a sponsor? Raise your hand. I want to see. You guys are the soberest guys in the room. Wasn't there a question about that earlier? So what happened was, he told me that if I wanted him to be my sponsor, that I'd have to call him every day, and that I would have to attend the Robber's Roost closed men's meeting, and that if after I did a fifth step, I would attend a lineage book study at his house because he's heard about me and he thinks if I can get past step five, he thinks his stuff will be safe. Because he got the same speech from Kip. You know what I mean? And the other thing, what did I miss? Lineage book study? Did I get that already? Oh, three commitments at all times. How could I forget that? Oh, I'm missing one, that's why. I got two right now. It won't be long, though. So, I thought to myself, I'm struggling with this right now. What a bunghole. FNG, you know what I mean? So what happened was, those requirements, it turned out to be the best freaking thing that's ever happened in my entire life, man. I wanted to fit in with the bikers. I wanted to fit in with all the gunslingers. I wanted to fit in with all them people. And I did, to a degree. God had a different plan. You know? He told me, hey, guess what? I'm like, what? He goes, you're going to... Oh, but this is... Paul, I apologize if this is not how it went down. But this is how I perceived it. I'm sure you were probably nicer, but I was at an NA meeting, and I'm like, ah, my name's Robert Albrecht. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a convict. I'm a drug addict. I'm a sexaholic. I'm a kleptomaniac. I'm a pathological liar. I'm a... Come here. Why don't you shut the... You know what I mean? The only thing you're doing is carrying the mess, not the message. He goes, I got an idea. Why don't you don't share until we get a little step work under your belt? He goes, and then when you do go into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll be an alcoholic. He goes, when you go into a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, you'll be an addict. When you go into Crackhead Anonymous, you'll be a crackhead. When you go into Meth Anonymous, you'll be a tookie-doo, or whatever they are. You know? And when you go into Fat Girls Anonymous, you'll be a fat girl. I'm like, did he just call me a fat? He didn't say girl, but you know. So anyways, the moral of the story is there's one program, and that's the 12 steps. There's 100 different fellowships. He told me you qualify for most of them there, Bobby. You know what I mean? So have a little bit of respect for the fellowship that you're in. And then the first time I ever heard, oh, why do people get all dressed up when they got to talk? He goes, to have a little bit of respect for the program that saved your dumb ass. You know? Otherwise, I wouldn't be up here like this. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night because Kip and those guys would be haunting me. I didn't sleep last night. Maybe they were there. I don't know. I'm not going to let you live this one down, Jason. What's your address, man? And so what happened was, I read the first 164 pages. When I got done with that, he told me to read chapters 3 and 4 over again. And then he sat down with me at the bench in the park while the Sunday NA meeting was going on. And we opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to page 30. And he told me, he said, read. And I read. We read about halfway over onto the next page. And then he brought me back to the middle of the little paragraph on page 30. It says, had to fully concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. What do you think your innermost self is?
Got me.
Today I know that to be my soul. I was an alcoholic for a lot of people. The judge, my mom, parole, probation, cops, whatever. I'm an alcoholic, man. You know me? I was never an alcoholic for deep down with inside of me. And then he explained to me that if I hadn't done that step, there's probably not much sense in what's going on. You know what I mean? And then what happened is we got to page 45. You know what I mean? And when he told me that about page 30, what happened is I had to get honest, man. You know what I mean? With me. Nobody else but me. And then he took me to page 45 and we started on there because now I know why he had me read 3 and 4 over again. And then we got to page 45 and we got over there to about where it says you must find a power greater than yourself. You know what I mean? And so what happened was is I didn't have a problem with that because I'd already been Jesus and you know all that stuff. And I knew there was a God. I just wasn't him. And what happened was is then we got to step 3. And we started reading on page 60. And we read that. And then when we got over on like 62, please excuse me if I'm wrong. I'm under hot lights and all that stuff and I don't want to flip through the book. It's my daily readings. I read them this morning. But it says in there, there's a little paragraph that says, self-seeking, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear. We think this is the root of our troubles. And he had me right in there. He goes, this is basically alcoholism in a nutshell. I find that to be true in my life. Might not work for you. I don't know. What happened for me then is we got on step 3 after we read 62, 63. And we got on our knees and we said the third step prayer together. And no, lightning bolts didn't zap me in the butt. It was all rainbows and unicorns, you know what I mean? We held hands and skipped out of there. What happened was, he gave me my daily readings then. He said, you'll read page 86 on awakening to the end of the chapter. He said, you'll read 62, 63, and you'll read 417 on acceptance to the end of the chapter. And you'll read them every day. And you'll call me every day. I'll have people pick you up for the meeting. You know? And then what happened was, he took me through my steps rapidly and thoroughly. It wasn't a step a month, all that other crappy horse caca. And what happened was, I remember I was starting to lag a little bit on my fourth. I don't like that suggestion. Because I had stuff in there that I hadn't told nobody. I did 1, 2, 3 drink. Did it with Scotty Ashoff. I ain't telling that little long-haired hippie man or anything, you know what I mean? He don't look right. And what happened was, he told me the same thing Kip told him. In case you haven't noticed, Sparky, you ain't got time to be goofing around, you know what I mean? And he explained it to me. He had me read 60 to the end of the chapter, after 63 to the end of the chapter for a week for four-step preparation about resentments, fears, sexual inventory. And then he met me a week later and he set me down and he put me down on the columns, gave me a couple examples, and I went and did my four-step. I did the resentments. And then I was done with that. He looked at my work and then I did the fears. He also explained to me that fears are stuff that I'm guilty, shameful. I don't want people to know about, although I have no resentment. Like I didn't pay child support. I wasn't able to go to my stepfather's funeral. I was in prison. Things that I have no resentment about, but that I'm shameful and fearful of people knowing about. Spanking my kid with hairbrush, drunk, stuff like that. Beating my son at 10 years old, all that kind of stuff. That was after I did step, sorry. So, anyways, what happened was I got that all down on paper. The sexual inventory made me do a minimum of half page on what my sexual inventory, what my sex behavior was like before I got sober. He made me list every person, whatever, anything I could, everything I ever, you know what I mean? Down on paper. Then he made me write a little sentence. Such and such a girl, sister's girlfriend at the cottage on my mini bike. I started that biker stuff early, you know what I mean? And then what happened was, I had to write a page about that afterwards. And then what happened was, he held me off to the Back to Basics retreat until I could do a fifth step. It's another payment of that $500 you guys sent. It was on Back to Basics number 6. First one was in 2001. I did my first step for the first time in my entire life. I trusted another man for the first time in my entire life that I didn't trust with a dope bag or a gun or a motorcycle to watch my back. And what happened was, as I told you, I'd like to go to Tijuana, for you guys that don't know where that is, Mexico, my backyard. And what happened was, is I like to go down there and drink, shoot dope, cheap hookers. Well, one time I came to down there, I wandered down to the far end of town. What happened is, as I came to, I'm on CD, right? And, wrap it up? Okay. And what happened was, is I had woke up with some transgender, or people with wrong plumbing. Let me put it that way. And what happened was, is I took that stuff to my grave. I wasn't going to tell anybody about it for 20 years. And I got to tell that guy that for the first time. And I experienced freedom for the first time in my life. And I've never had to drink alcohol or anything since then. And the only reason I share that from up here is if you got something going on that you don't want to talk about, please do. Anyways, gentlemen, what happened is, I've out-talked myself again. I got about 5 minutes. If you want to know exactly how my sponsor took me through the steps, that little girl that I pissed the whooped her mom and I beat with, I talked to her today on the telephone. She was reunited in my life after 17 years. After 3 different motorcycle clubs had had a contract out on me and was had me, they had me in the car, ready to take me to the desert and bury me because of who her grandpappy was. You know? After 17 years, that girl and I have a beautiful relationship. I call her and tell her I'm going to talk about you and what I did to your mother and stuff. And we cry and we pray. And my son, who hasn't talked to me in 2 years because I've whooped his butt with the belt at sober while I'm on parole, he called me the other day with the little messenger video for the first time in 2 years. Text him today. Got your back, Pops. You know what I mean? I'll be praying for you. And then I can go on with the amends and all that other kind of stuff. I got another whole day and a half. You know what I mean? Pull me over. But anyways, maybe someday I'll be able to coordinate it a little better. But what I'd like to do is just thank you guys again, once again, for the $500 you sent, man. I don't know if it worked for you, but it darn sure worked for me. And I just want to thank God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll close with a line that Paul Wegeman uses when he closes. I never got my old life back. I got a life better than the one that I used to sit on that bar stool and in that dope house and lie about. Thank you, gentlemen.